Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to KFM. It's Caoimhe Harney. Clock this afternoon. It's the 25th of April 2023. Where is the time going? The year is flying by. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Philip Byrne, Chartered Valuation Surveyor at Coonan Property in Maynooth. The most expensive land in the country is here in County Kildare, where good quality land is fetching an average of just over €15,000 per acre. We'll speak to Tara Regan, Communications and Advocacy Manager at Arthritis Ireland. This week is National Arthritis Week. We'll speak to Gail Flanagan, PhD candidate in the School of Modern Languages and Applied Linguistics at the University of Limerick. Why Irish people love making connections when we meet strangers. Then we'll speak to Bernadette Cox, a Newbridge woman who has just returned home from representing Ireland in Australia at the World Transplant Games. Of course, if you want to get in touch with the show, 0458 989 999. That's our text line number, or our call line number here. If you want to email me, it's studio@kfmradio.com, or you can text me.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, Kildare has the most expensive land in the country, with good quality land fetching an average of just over €15,000 per acre. That's according to a major new survey carried out by the Society of Chartered Surveyors Ireland. And I'm joined now on the line by Philip Byrne. He's a Chartered Valuation Surveyor at Coonan Property in Maynooth. Good afternoon, Philip.
Caoimhe, how are you?
I suppose, Philip, in your line of work, this probably wouldn't be that surprising.
No, I think consistently Kildare is in the top two counties by virtue of price per acre of agricultural land. There's a few reasons for that, Caoimhe. Obviously, due to its location on the edge of Dublin, the quality of the land by and large, and you have the sizable equine business, I suppose, in the county, which, you know, between stud farms and people training establishments, etc., as well as the farming sector, which has a mixed farming sector of sheep, tillage, dairying. You know, there's a combination of factors that increase the demand and obviously the accessibility of finance for land as well, you know.
Absolutely. I suppose you're located up the north of the county there in Maynooth, and it's one of those areas where I'm sure farmers have a lot of competition in terms of property developers, you know, trying to come in and buy land that maybe you wouldn't see in more southern parts of the county, in South Kildare, Philip.
Correct. And I mean, obviously the demand in the housing sector has been well flagged, and it obviously in key population centres, land, while maybe not zoned for development, is obviously in high demand from developers, which further puts pressure, reduces the pool of land, I suppose, for those in farming that wish to graze cows or sow crops, etc., you know. So it's been reduced from the pot, and obviously the overall volume of land is stagnant, so they're not making any more of it, as they say, you know.
Absolutely, a finite resource. I suppose, yeah. in terms of then, you know, for people listening in, and when we talk about zoned agricultural, or, you know, for residential, is it difficult for a property developer to maybe buy agricultural land and zone that to use it for building houses, or what? How does that process work?
Well, every 6 years is a county development plan done for every county in Ireland, and the county council zones various parcels of land which are suitable for a range of reasons, be it development or be it for green space generally in around the towns or the main population areas. So, you know, to answer your question, it is difficult for developers to get land in those locations that has a good chance of getting rezoned to build houses on. It's not an easy process at all.
National farmland prices are forecast to rise by 8% on average for this year, Philip. We'll probably see that rise a little bit higher here in Kildare, of course, given where we are. What have you seen so far this year, or how has the market been?
So far this year, the land market has been good, but there hasn't been a huge amount of land traded as of yet. The season really starts from the 1st of April, when the weather improves and you'll see more land coming on the market. There's more auctions coming. and you know, over the next few months. But the demand, certainly by the inquiries we're receiving in our offices, are is very high for land. It's sought after, and I suppose overall the volume of land traded every year is very small relative to the whole volume of land in the country. So when land does come up, particularly in Kildare, for sure, it's always in demand for a range of purposes that I mentioned earlier, you know.
So it would be more in demand here in this county in comparison to other counties, of course, because of our proximity to Dublin.
That's one big factor, but there's, as I say, there's a lot of farming enterprises chasing the land as well in Kildare, more so maybe than other parts of the country where the land mightn't be as suitable for the wide range of uses that it is in Kildare.
Our neighbours Meath, of course, quite clear, close to us as well, they're averaging at around 15,200 per acre in comparison to 15,333 euro per acre here in Kildare. So not much of a difference, but still fairly up there as well, Philip.
It is, yeah. Well, Meath and Kildare would be very similar. They've a similar profile in terms of quality of land, obviously the location vis-a-vis Dublin, good road networks. They're very similar counties in that respect. What I suppose where Kildare would win is the strength of the equestrian and industry. Obviously, it's well known there'll be a far more concentration of stud farms in Kildare, and obviously a lot of them doing very well, and they would, you know, significantly increase the demand for plots of land coming on the market, you know.
Mm-hmm. Leaving land aside for a minute, how are the property prices in Kildare at the moment, and how do you see that going forward in the next couple of months, Philip? I know you're not a mind reader, but you might have an idea for us.
I think the price of anything is kind of controlled by supply and demand in general. The demand continues to be high. If you take your residential prices, the residential market is still in demand. The supply is not yet there to satisfy that demand. So until that happens, prices are still going to edge up, you know. Now, I know the rising interest rates and the cost of purchasing houses is getting more expensive on the average buyer, which will curtail increases a little bit. But demand is still outstripping supply, so I think we're in for another year of price increases, albeit maybe not as high as the last couple of years.
Okay, thank you very much. That is Philip Byrne, Chartered Valuation Surveyor at Coonan Property in Maynooth, with that news for us that Kildare has some of the most expensive land in the country, the most expensive, with good quality land fetching an average of just over 15,000 euro, 15,333 euro to be exact. And on the lower end of the scale, then the poorer land in this county fetching around 9,083 euro per acre. Thanks very much to Philip. Of course, today is day one of the Punchestown Festival, and big exciting things in Kildare. I remember back in the day, back in Rathmore National School, we used to get the week off, no less. We even had the Monday off, so we made no bones about it, and we were very sad when we started having to go to school during those weeks. Actually, I don't think I ever had to in primary school. It was only when I moved into the big school in Naas for secondary school that I didn't get all those days off. So I was very sad about that. But I was just thinking there today, and many people around Kildare will know this man, or may have encountered him over the years, Father Sean Breen, or the Breener, better known. He was the racing priest, and he served out in Eadstown, in my home parish, for many, many years. He was later then moved to Ballymore Eustace, of course, just a stone's throw away from Eadstown, where he was the parish priest there too. And he died at the age of 71, so relatively young. But anyone who knew him would know he was a huge, huge fan of racing. He was basically the unofficial chaplain of Irish punters all around the world. And He used to go over to Cheltenham. He'd say mass in a local hotel over in Cheltenham, and he used to pray for lots of Irish winners and that the bookies would have enough money to pay out all of the punters over there. So just on today, I was thinking about him and all the good times we used to have back in Eadstown with Father Breen. And he used to give tips off the altar at the very end. So he'd say his final blessing. And if there was racing on that day, which of course there usually always was, he'd give Niall tips. So he really appealed to the masses, you know, bringing in the punters to the parish and that kind of thing. So if you do know of Father Sean Breen, or if you've any good stories about him, please do let me know. 0833 97 97 97. I remember him coming over to my house before for Sunday dinner. He used to come over the odd time, and he used to eat his ice cream melted. So he'd take ice cream and he'd swing it around the bowl and just drink it like soup. So there you go. A very interesting way to drink your ice cream. But that was Father Breen. So let me know if you did know him, and if you've any nice stories about him. 0833 97 97 97. Coming up after the break, we'll be speaking to Tara Regan, Communications and Advocacy Manager at Arthritis Ireland. This week is National Arthritis Week. Don't go away.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, this week is National Arthritis Week, and it's taking place from the 24th to the 30th. And Arthritis Ireland is raising awareness of this chronic condition, which affects, would you believe, one in five people here in this country. Well, I'm joined now on the line by Tara Regan. She's Communications and Advocacy Manager at Arthritis Ireland. Good afternoon, Tara.
Hi, Caoimhe. How are you? Thank you very much for having me on.
Delighted to have you, Tara. I think probably most of us would know someone who suffers with arthritis, and it can be really debilitating, can't it?
It absolutely can, Caoimhe. And like you said, one in five people in Ireland live with arthritis, which is really an astonishing figure. It is absolutely one of those things. It's not just a few pains and aches for people who live with it. You know, there's joint damage, there's, you know, severe pain, stiffness, immobility, deformity, you know, and it's the single biggest cause of disability in Ireland. So it's certainly, you know, one of those conditions that we want to make sure people are more aware of, not just for the signs and symptoms, but also so that they're aware of the services and supports that we provide so that people can improve the quality of life that they have, because it does have a huge impact on your life when you get a diagnosis and when you have to live with arthritis.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things that it's probably not very noticeable to someone from the outside that someone would have arthritis. Maybe in some people, probably not all, you might notice it in the hands, you know, around joints and that. But can you tell us a little bit more about arthritis and what people should really look out for, or how you could notice it?
Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, that's one of the most, I suppose, frustrating things for people, is that it's often an invisible disease. So for somebody who's living with arthritis, it may not be visible to somebody that they're in a lot of pain, you know, and it causes a range of symptoms, you know, from joint pain to inflammation, you know, will be some of the first symptoms that somebody might, you know, experience. It can also cause like a lot of fatigue in people, you know, and it's not probably the same as being tired. It's very much like kind of almost like a very heavy fatigue that people would experience. And there's over 100 types of arthritis. So it's a hugely varied disease and like a varied treatments for people depending on the type of arthritis that they have and that the stage that they're at in their arthritis journey. And I suppose what we always say is that if you think you may have some signs and symptoms of arthritis, you should contact your GP. They will then do an assessment, maybe take a brief history, and they may recommend that you see a rheumatologist. Once you see a rheumatologist, you may have certain tests such as, you know, an X-ray, MRI, blood tests. And again, they'll look at your family history quite closely. And once you have a diagnosis, then you'd be better advised how to treat it and how to manage it. And where we step in, I suppose, is that we offer a helpline and self-management programs for people that are free of charge so that they can learn to live with their condition, but also to improve their quality of life. And we always say to people, if it's emotional support that you need, or if it's more information about arthritis, our arthritisireland.ie website is great, but our helpline is there with, you know, it's manned by volunteers from Monday to Friday. And the people that you talk to have experience of living with arthritis themselves. and they're fully trained, and they'll treat your call with the strictest of confidence, and they'll give you emotional support as well as signpost you to the services and supports that we provide.
Okay, it's absolutely amazing that you have this helpline because, like you said, you know, it does affect so many people. And when we think about arthritis, though, you probably think of maybe someone older. Does it affect a younger cohort of people, Tara?
It does, unfortunately, it does, Caoimhe. So there's about 1,200 children and young people under the age of 16 living with juvenile idiopathic arthritis in Ireland. And then aside from the 1,200 children and young people, you know, obviously it follows people into young adulthood, their 20s and 30s, right up, you know, so it really is one of those diseases that unfortunately affects people from birth right through to adulthood. And, you know, we do our best in terms of, you know, creating awareness of it. But what we try to, I suppose, encourage people to do is to manage their condition and work alongside their health professional team to do what they can to improve their quality of life. So we have a Living Well with Arthritis programme. It's a six-week programme that you take part in for one day a week, and it can be online or in person. You'll meet people who are experiencing some of the same experiences as you, which is, it's a great way of connecting with people, and it can often be a transformative experience for people to engage with this programme because it'll help them in terms of, you know, looking at things like how to manage pain, how to manage fatigue, how to set goals, you know, dealing with work situations, exercise, eating healthily. You know, there's a whole range of things in there as well. And we also run a program called Behind the Pain, which deals with the mental health aspect of having such a debilitating condition, you know, because obviously your physical health suffers, but also your mental health may suffer. And it's really important to look after your mental health with a condition such as arthritis, because, like I said, it is invisible to a lot of people. You may be experiencing pain and fatigue and frustrations, you know, things like even, you know, picking up a child, getting dressed, holding down a job. They're all really, really important things. You need to look out for your mental health as well. So we would really encourage people to look after themselves and to try to, you know, find ways to deal with their condition as best they can and move forward with a plan.
Okay. Look, I think sometimes there's people out there who, you know, put things off. Maybe they have pains or they have joint pain and they don't go and see a doctor for, you know, not just for arthritis, but for any kind of thing. But really, I suppose intervention there is key, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is. And if you look at our website, we have a list of all the main arthritic conditions and the signs and symptoms that you should watch out for, you know. And what we would say to people is, you know, if there's a family history, if you have signs and symptoms and joint pain and fatigue and pain in general, do talk to your GP. Don't leave it, because, you know, the earlier that you have intervention, the better your outcome will be. So we would always encourage people to talk to their GP to make sure that they don't ignore the signs and symptoms. And talk to your family and friends. You know, if you get a diagnosis, you know, even if you don't think that people your age should have arthritis, you know, talk to your family and friends and involve them in and, you know, explain to them how you're feeling, because it is really important to have the support of those people around you when you're going through this journey.
Tara, I know there is a wide array of different symptoms that you could have, but could you give us a couple just so people have a little indication?
Yeah, I suppose, so look, you might have, for example, you know, stiff, painful, swollen joints. You know, that could be your ankle, it could be your knees, it could be your toes, your fingers, your lower back. You know, it could cause swelling and heat if it's an inflammatory arthritis. The joint might be hot to the touch. You know, one of these things is like if your fingers are swollen as well, it could be any number of types of arthritis for that as well. You know, with some arthritic conditions, like, for example, psoriatic arthritis, which is linked to the skin condition psoriasis, you might have eye inflammation as well as, you know, the actual skin condition. So there's a lot of things you can watch out for. But I suppose the most important thing, I suppose, will be, you know, stiff, painful, swollen joints. That would be probably the main one to watch out for. Yeah, it would be, certainly, yeah. And look, like I said, if there's a family history there, that can also be an indication, you know, that it may be something that if a family member has had it, you may be more likely to get it, depending on the type of arthritis.
Okay. I know there's currently no cure for arthritis, Tara, but is there anything that people can do? I know you're going to say, you know, talk to your GP, but are there any things that people can do to maybe mitigate some of the effects of it?
Well, look, obviously there's a treatment programme depending on your condition and the stage that you're at. So that may involve taking medication. But it can also involve things like non-medication therapy, such as like physiotherapy, occupational therapy, physical activity, relaxation techniques. They can all be beneficial in terms of helping to manage and decrease your pain and increase your movement. And we always are very strong advocates for physical activity because the more activity you can do, the better with your condition. And we actually run Being Active with Arthritis course as well, which is free, and it's run with the Irish Society of Chartered Physiotherapists. Again, it's a one-hour session once every 6 weeks, and it can be done online or in person. And during that, you will learn, I suppose, the physiotherapist that runs that course will show you the sort of activities and exercises you can do to improve your strength and mobility and your overall outcome with arthritis.
Okay, just before I let you go, Tara, will you give us the helpline number there if you have it at hand?
I will indeed. And actually, one thing I should mention as well, Caoimhe, is that there is a really active Arthritis Ireland branch in Kildare.
Okay.
And they run a lot of classes like seated yoga classes and walking groups. And they run from in Athy, Kildare, Newbridge, Kilcullen, you know, right across the county.
Across,
in the
okay.
So, look, I would say to people, do look out for them. They're very active and they run a lot of classes, which are very much for people with arthritis. And you can connect with people who understand what you're going through as well, which is really important. But the helpline number, like you said, it's 0818 252 846. And that's open from Monday to Friday, 10 to 4 p.m.
0818 252 846. Okay, perfect. 0818 252 846. That is the arthritis helpline. And like Tara Regan was saying just there, this week is National Arthritis Week. Thanks very much, Tara, for your time. And I'm joined now on the line by Gail Flanagan. She's a PhD candidate in the School of Modern Languages and Applied Linguistics at the University of Limerick. And she will be telling us why Irish people love making connections when we meet strangers. Good afternoon, Gail.
Hello, Caoimhe. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Delighted to have you on, Gail. Gail, it's something I think that everyone probably does and they don't realise that they do it. But it's only when you realise that not every other country does it. I went on Erasmus, actually, when I was studying down at the University of Limerick. I went on Erasmus to Sweden. And people weren't too friendly in the sense of, like, I would try and strike up conversations with randomers and they weren't that forthcoming.
I know what you mean. And I mean, I suppose conversation is one thing, and it's definitely that we love the chat and we like to be, you know what I mean, we're very reciprocal, we're very hospitable in our chat. But definitely the making connections, I mean, it's gone back to, I suppose, to last century, you know what I mean? Up until like mid last century, we lived in small communities and a lot of people were actually, you know, directly related or descended, and we had what was known as the Irish kinship system. And, you know, when we look back, that kind of made a very, oh, that's so-and-so, and that's where they're from, and that's who they're related to, and the brother, the cousin, or, you know, the grandparent, or whatever. Mm. But we've definitely continued it. I mean, as you say, you know what I mean? If you said you didn't strike up conversation with somebody, perhaps, who was from Sweden, but I bet if you went into, like, an Irish pub, or you met another Irish person, you'd then end up in a verbal, I don't know, like a game of catch, where you'd be like, well, now, I'm from, you know, this place, or even so far you've even told me so far you went to college in Limerick, you know, and I'm sure if we actually, now who you know, who was your lecturer, I'm sure we would find people in common.
Absolutely. I will say, Gail, I'm probably an oversharer. I'll put my hand up there. But do you think, Gail, that as time goes on that we're going to lose this, or, you know, are things changing?
Yeah, we don't seem to be. So okay. I suppose when I was thinking about this and realising, God, this is something that seems to be more typically Irish, because, you know, I was sitting with neighbours and friends who were other nationalities, and that's when it dawned on me, maybe this is more Irish. And then I said, right, I'm going to have researched this a bit. So I did go back and look at, you know, read and learned a lot about, like, family and community. But there, like, Tom Inglis, who's based in UCD, his study's only going in 2008. It was, he did a detailed study of a village in Meath, Beliver. And I think your listeners in Kildare, again, and even down to where I am in Clare, we can all relate to this. Communities have become maybe, you know, extensions of, like, large urban areas. You know what I mean? A lot of people have moved around, but we still very much connect. We still seem to have this connection grid. It mightn't be as local as one townland to the next, but we still, I don't think we've lost it. We haven't lost it when we go abroad. Mm. It's in the article that I had put up in RT Brainstorm. Mm. But I mean, what started this as well for me was a tweet, which was six Irish people on a beach in Australia. None of them knew each other, but they'd all had the same Christmas shirt that the mammy had sent out, but they all went and talked to each other.
Yes.
And I think it's our propensity to talk. We use, you know what I mean? We're willing to talk, and we're very direct when it comes to talking about where we're from and who we might know.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I suppose when you think about the people that you know, or, you know, even that you don't know, it's one of those things that you wonder, why is it that us Irish people are like that and other nationalities aren't? Like, what is it in us that makes us want to talk to everyone and find that connection?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the kinship system. It goes back even to our farming background. We were traditionally a farming community. And that would have been very much collective, you know what I mean? Not kind of going into kind of very socialist, but it was socialist. We were sharing tools, we workload, you know what I mean? When it came to certain times of the year, everybody would pitch in on the farm. And that kind of extended to our chat and then to our connections. And we were smaller communities, but we have a very strong sense of identity. Probably because we are a smaller country, I think because we're a newish nation state as well. So when the Irish state was formed, that was only in the last century, institutions like the GAA were set up in order to establish this sense of Irish identity, and they're so strong today. It mightn't have been, I mean, like, I don't know, did it ever go out of vogue? But I know, you know, with my children, I can see it. You know, the GAA is still there and watching the match on a Sunday afternoon. There's certain things. I mean, we're all, you know, drinking Starbucks now and eating Asian food and having ramen and noodles. But at the same time, we're watching the GAA match. You know what I mean? As you said it, we're wearing the GAA jersey. You know, we're on the lookout for anybody wherever we go. Anyone else who may be Irish?
Absolutely. It's interesting, and you probably know this lecturer. Her name escapes me now, but I remember being in a lecture years ago down in UL, and our lecturer told us that she had a friend from somewhere in Europe. I can't remember what country, but they invited her to a wedding. And the wedding was from 4 until 7, you know, and it's that kind of, you know, we don't have, everything here seems to be quite open-ended, it really leaves that kind of room for talking and socialising and getting out there, doesn't it, Gail?
Yeah, that's exactly, you know what, Cuaoimh, that's a great point as well. And even part of like this kinship system are the rituals that surround it. Now, you know, a lot of them were based on, I suppose, religious occasions, which is what a wedding would have been, but you would have been having the crack. But even think of the Holy Communions, and I don't know about you, but like we're in the season of the confirmations and the communion still in many households. And, you know, there's, you know, things like even they would be marked and kin would gather. That was it. We're very much a nation of gathering together, you know, to talk within the family, within the extended family. And, you know, we see it. You know, we might have sent people out into the world, but they've kept that connection. I mean, you know, Joe Biden. I mean,
absolutely.
He was here. Well, we were all related to Joe. God bless him.
I read an article, I think it was very recently, in the Irish Independent, and it was a woman speaking about the Irish abroad, specifically in Australia, in a quite distasteful way, you know, that we stick to ourselves, we don't like to mingle, you know, we still eat roast dinners on a Sunday in the hot sun in Perth. Do you think that's how we're perceived?
Gosh, it's hard. I mean, you can't, you know, if this is one person's perception of it, but I mean, you look at everything that Irish people have done all over the world as well. I think we're quite generally liked, and, you know, I mean, you can say that about any community. Mm-hmm. Any community will have their traditions and their rituals and their sense of getting together and, you know, food and everything. So you can really, you know, it is stereotyping. So say from, like, in linguistics, we talk a lot about stereotyping. And it's not nice. And we, you know, when I say we, I say like, you know, we do it to different nationalities. But and you know, you think people would have kind of copped on. But even things like we saw with the Oscars recently, and some of the stuff about Banshees of Inisherin. Mm-hmm. You know, Banshees mm-hmm. won because it was a brilliant film. But yet they kind of brought in the Irishry to it, and you know, some of the British media as well with Joe Biden's visit. There were, you know, kind of, there was one cartoon that was dreadful. So, look at, not everybody, you know what I mean? People are going, and then where does humour stop? Or where does it get a bit, you know, where does the stereotype get a bit, you know?
I know this is about a bit out of the blue now, Gail, but if you were to say in your line of work, and I'm sure you've come across many different nationalities and cultures, what culture or nationality do you think we're most like around the world?
Oh, that's it. Yeah, I don't. You know what I mean? Again, you're kind of like, right, are we like another national group? We're very like our neighbours, the British. We definitely are. From my area of expertise would be more in linguistics. And we can be indirect and we're polite. So we're very like, you know, more Northern Europeans, but then that sense of family, and even informally, right, you know, that I would, when I chatted, like, if I would say, well, God, are, like, you know, are, you know, if we're like this, you know, what's it like in, I'm saying to, you know, a friend of mine in Finland, or what's it like? I think, you know, the Spanish, I see a lot of us in the Spanish, the family, and that, you know, that gathering together. And again, maybe it goes back. I mean, you know, religion was, you know, dominant, over-dominant, perhaps, in the country. But, you know, as a Catholic country, Spain, we're also, you know, a Catholic country as well. So, you know, could be for that reason as well.
Absolutely. Similar to Spain and Italy in that way then with the Catholicism,
With the Catholicism, but we're far more like the British and even going, you know, and more reserved in how we say, how we get our point across and being direct or being more indirect. So it depends what facet of the Irish that you're looking at. I know, like, tonight I teach business, intercultural communication and business communication. We'd relate a lot to the Americans as well. We may be the Americans, maybe a little bit more individualistic. But we're actually quite individualistic from, you know, and according to some research as well. It really depends what trait, what characteristic you're looking at. And it depends on the setting. So how, you know, we're having a chat now, but like how we might, you know what I mean, what we might say and not say and how we would behave in a different environment. You know what I mean? If it was more formal or in the workplace or if we didn't know somebody as well, you know. It all depends.
Well, that is. Thanks very much, Gail, for your time. So interesting. That's Gail Flanagan, PhD candidate in the School of Modern Languages and Applied Linguistics at the University of Limerick, telling us there why Irish people love making connections when we meet strangers abroad. Thanks very much to Gail. Now, the World Transplant Games in Perth, Australia have concluded. The 14 inspirational members of Transplant Team Ireland have dispersed, carrying not only an impressive haul of medals, but the undeniable treasured memory of being part of such a life-affirming event. Well, I'm joined now on the line by Bernadette Cox. She is from Newbridge and she is just back from Perth in the last few days. Good afternoon, Bernadette.
Hi, Aquiva. How are you?
Bernadette, we'll get to all your adventures down under in a few minutes. But first off, just tell us about your own experience as a transplant recipient and when it happened.
I had my transplant in October 2020, in the middle of COVID. I had been diagnosed years earlier with kidney failure, and I was very lucky. I was only on the list for waiting for a year for the transplant.
Okay.
And everything went very well, and I've been great ever since.
Well, that's brilliant. A great news story, even though it must have been very difficult during that time, especially COVID, to go into hospital and go through all of that. But if we come to the games itself, how did you get involved with this? Is this something that everyone who gets a transplant is approached about?
No, they're not all approached about it, but it is out there. You know, most people know about it. And if they don't, I mean, it's very easy to contact the Irish Kidney Association and find out about it. I had heard about it from somebody who works in the IKA, Actually, he's the team manager. His name is Colin White, and he's the person to contact. And I'd heard about it from Colin. And because when I had the transplant, I couldn't do a whole lot afterwards because of COVID. But I promised the family, now I contacted them anonymously, obviously, and I promised them that I would do something to honour my donor because, I mean, they've given me the greatest gift you can give to anybody. So when this came up, I thought, right, this is something that's totally out of my comfort zone and it's something I can do.
Absolutely.
And honour my donor at the same time and something I really wanted to do. So,
tell us then, what were you competing in over there, Bernadette?
I competed in two very low-stress games, because I'm not that young anymore. One is called Petanque. It's French bowls.
Oh.
And the other was lawn bowls.
Oh, very nice. I've never heard of Petanque before now.
Yeah, that's great.
And how did you get on over there?
Well, I didn't win any medals, but I did. I qualified for the playoffs for the bronze medal in the bowls, in the lawn bowls, but unfortunately I was beaten by a lovely Thai lady.
Well, listen, it's as they always say, it's not about the medals, I'm more about
exactly.
the participation. Of course, the team overall got 17 medals,
yes.
7 gold, 6 silver and 4 bronze, so I mean, that's amazing.
It was absolutely, you know, for 14 people, you know, as 14 people to get that many medals is absolutely fantastic, you
really
know.
Really fantastic. Bernadette, was it your first time over to Australia?
It was. I've
How
never
was
been
it?
There before, so... You know, the whole experience was just fantastic. I didn't know the other team members beforehand, so I've made a lot of new friends. And just all the other countries, everybody was so friendly and so nice. And any rivalry there was in the games was friendly rivalry and was forgotten as soon as the game was over, if you understand me.
Yeah.
You know, it was a fantastic. I would encourage anybody that's had a transplant to get involved in it because... Like, there's something for all ages and all experiences. I was a total novice.
Yeah.
I'm 68 years of age. You know, so it's not like it's a young person's thing. There's something for absolutely everybody. And it's amazing. It really is.
And tell us this. Did all of the participants stay in the one hotel? Or, you know, were you there with other people from different countries as well?
Yes, there were some from other countries. We all stayed in the one hotel. It was an apart hotel, so we had an apartment each.
Lovely.
And there were other people. There were Australians, there were Italians, there were Americans. You know, there was lots of people. And everybody was friendly with everybody, you know, sort of thing. And
was there much of a party scene over there, Bernadette?
There was a bit of a party scene, you know, but not anything too wild because usually somebody or several people were participating the next day, you know, so nobody went too wild.
Okay.
But, you know, it was
Go
just
ahead.
Nice to sit and chat at night as well.
Absolutely. I'm sure you've made loads of friends now within Ireland, but probably further afield as well within, you know, the Petanque and the Bowls community.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean... I played mostly Orientals, to be honest. There was a couple of ladies from Hong Kong and, as I say, a lady from Thailand. And, like, you know, we made friends. We may not contact each other again, but we've made friends. I made friends with a lovely lady from Australia. I actually practiced with her and then the next day came up against her as a competitor. So it was, you know.
So.
But this is lovely. As I say, it's a very friendly atmosphere and I would say to anybody that's had a transplant, you know, contact Colin, contact the IKA and get involved because, you know, it's just really fantastic and it does honour your donor. It, you know, it's to show that, as somebody said to me, we may have had transplants, but we're not invalids.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think you've more than honoured your donor and all of the people who went over, the 14 from Ireland have. I suppose then, Bernadette, was there any kind of... my question has escaped me now. Was there any kind of rivalry or anything like that? Or was it just everyone was quite happy even when they were coming up against, you know, maybe, like you said, your friend who was from Australia?
Oh, no, there was no rivalry like that. I mean, I came up against her and, you know, we just laughed that we were playing each other. Mm. And if I was doing something wrong, she was telling me, no, you should do it this way. Or likewise me with her, you know. So, you know, I mean, it was any rivalry that was there was very friendly rivalry. And like I say, once a game or whatever ended, that's, you know, it all ended then. Everybody became friends, you know, was still friends. There was no nastiness whatsoever.
And do the games take place every year?
The World Games take place every second year, and in between there's the European Games. Like, next year is the European Games, and they will be held in Portugal, in Lisbon.
Okay.
And the following year is the World Games again, but this time they're in Dresden in Germany.
Okay, and will you be competing in those ones as well?
Oh, I think so. Now that I've got the feel for it, I think I'll go back again. I'll do a bit more practice.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Bernadette, fair play to you. That is Bernadette Cox from Newbridge, just back from Perth, Australia, where she competed in the World Transplant Games. And well done to all involved there. 17 medals in total. Thanks very much, Bernadette. That's all we have time for today. I'll be back at the same time tomorrow between 2 and 3.